I'm VOA's Joe Ramsey with your worldwide news update. Several U.S. states on Tuesday sued to stop one of President Donald Trump's first actions in office. AP correspondent Haya Pendwani reports.
New Jersey and more than a dozen other states are challenging President Trump's executive order ending the constitutional guarantee of birthright citizenship.
Presidents in this country have broad powers, but they are not kings.
New Jersey Democratic Attorney General Matt Plotkin.
The executive order renders many children born on American soil without citizenship, creating for the first time a class of American-born children whose health and well-being are threatened by their own government.
Trump's order would end the policy of automatically granting citizenship to people born in the United States. That's a move he said on the campaign trail he would do once he was in office. Plotkin and immigrants' rights groups point to the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. It says people born in the U.S. and subject to its jurisdiction are citizens. I'm Haya Pendwani.
President Trump on Tuesday wrapped up 4 days of inaugural-related events with a traditional church service and a message from one of the speakers. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
During an interfaith service at Washington National Cathedral,
I ask you to have mercy upon the people in our country who are scared now.
The Reverend Mary Ann Buddy, Washington's Episcopal bishop, urged the president to show compassion for LGBTQ plus people and undocumented workers.
The vast majority of immigrants are not criminals.
Asked about the service after returning here.
Not too exciting, was it? I didn't think it was a good service, no.
Sagar Magani at the White House.
This is VOA News. U.S. President Donald Trump faced criticism on Tuesday over his pardons of more than 1,500 people charged with crimes in the January 6, 2021 attack at the U.S. Capitol. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner reports.
Trump's pardons extended from the people who committed only misdemeanors such as trespassing to those who attacked police officers and to the far smaller group who planned the assault on democracy. Some Republican lawmakers have criticized the pardons, including Senator Tom Tillis, who said pardoning rioters who assaulted police sent the wrong message. More than 600 people were charged with assaulting or obstructing police during the riot, according to U.S. Justice Department figures. Some 140 police officers were injured.
Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner. Some across Africa are applauding President Trump's executive orders regarding gender and diversity, while others are expressing deep concern. Timothy Obuzu reports from Abuja, Nigeria's capital.
On his first day as the 47th U.S. president, Donald Trump signed a flurry of executive orders. These include orders revoking some protections for transgender people and defining the sexes strictly as male and female. Some, like Bishop John Praise Daniel, vice president of the Pentecostal Fellowship of Nigeria, welcome Trump's moves.
I'm very excited. I think Donald Trump has just done what is right.
But Frank Ejiogo, founder of Creme de la Creme, a Nigerian LGBTQ advocacy group, warns of serious consequences.
We know it's going to have a ripple effect, and that might catalyze a lot of violence against the LGBT community persons.
Members of the LGBTQ community already face harsh penalties in many African countries. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Officials in Turkey said at least 76 people were dead and dozens injured after a fire in a hotel at a popular ski resort in the northwestern part of the country during a school holiday. AP correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
The fire broke out early Tuesday at the restaurant of the 12-story Grand Kartal Hotel in Bolu province. The governor said at least two of the victims died after jumping from the building in a panic. Television images showed the roof and top floors of the hotel on fire as thick plumes of smoke floated out of some of the upper windows, while emergency services worked tirelessly to extinguish the blaze. A private Turkish TV station said some people tried to climb down from their rooms using sheets. I'm Karen Chamas.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Trump's executive orders on gender draw mixed reactions across Africa.
We know it's going to have a ripple effect, and that might catalyze a lot of violence against the LGBT community persons in the global south, which will boil down from discrimination, which will boil down to assault.
Trump's executive orders regarding the World Health Organization and a climate treaty bring challenges for Africa and opportunities for China. Divided views arise over the legacy of the late former Liberian warlord and Senator Prince Johnson. A new graduate-level school is set to open in Rwanda in September.
We are going to train leaders with a worldview of what Africa's place should be in the world and how African countries should organize their internal spaces.
And cervical cancer remains common despite global efforts to reduce it. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Conservatives across Africa are applauding U.S. President Donald Trump's executive order regarding gender and diversity, while gay rights activists and the LGBTQ community on the continent are expressing deep concern. Timothy Obiezu reports from Nigeria's capital, Abuja.
On his first day as the 47th U.S. president, Donald Trump signed a flurry of executive orders, including some that reversed policies by his predecessor, Joe Biden. These include orders revoking some protections for transgender people and defining the sexes strictly as male and female. Trump's actions have sparked a mix of reactions throughout Africa. Some, like Bishop John Praise Daniel, Vice President of the Pentecostal Fellowship of Nigeria, welcome Trump's moves.
I'm very excited. I think Donald Trump has just done what is right. So how can some young person wake up and say, I don't feel like being a girl, I want to be a boy, and their sexes will be changed? We don't need that confusion. Bringing back righteousness, bringing back order, bringing back sanity to society.
But while many in Africa's conservative societies are in support, LGBTQ activists strongly oppose the decision, calling it a setback after years of progress and advocacy. Frank Ejiogo, founder of Creme de la Creme, a Nigerian LGBTQ advocacy group, warns of serious consequences.
For me, I am not disappointed. Looking at his campaign promises and what have you, we know it's going to have a ripple effect. And that might catalyze a lot of violence against the LGBT community persons in the global south, which will boil down from discrimination, which will boil down to assault, which will boil down to a lot of policies that some government agencies or nations in the global south will start enacting.
Ejiogu says LGBTQ activists already are strategizing to resist such measures.
We are strategizing on how to stand firm in what we believe in and stand firm for the community. It can only be there for 4 years. But the only thing we've been promising ourselves, the LGBT community members all around the globe and also in the global south, is to making sure that we fight back to all those policies that's being enacted right now as against the LGBT community members all around the world.
Activists are concerned that Trump's moves will increase pressure on LGBTQ people in Africa and elsewhere. Members of the LGBTQ community already face harsh penalties in many African countries. In Nigeria, same-sex relationships are punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Uganda's Constitutional Court upheld a life sentence for homosexuality offenders last year, while Mali's Junta criminalized homosexuality with imprisonment in December. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
President Donald Trump has signed an executive order temporarily suspending all U.S. foreign assistance programs for 90 days. This pending reviews to determine whether they are aligned with his policy goals. According to the Associated Press, it was not immediately clear how much assistance will be initially affected by the order. That's because funding for many programs has already been appropriated by Congress and is obligated to be spent. If not, already spent. The order, among many that Trump signed on Monday, says the foreign aid industry and bureaucracy are not aligned with American interests and, in many cases, antithetical to American values and serve to destabilize world peace by promoting ideas in foreign countries that are directly inverse to harmonious and stable relations internal to and among countries. On Inauguration Day, U.S. President Donald Trump signed executive orders that set in motion the country's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty, as well as from the World Health Organization. Africa's top health officials say it is still seeking more information on the decision, while analysts say Trump moves could open the door even more for China on the continent. Kate Butler reports from Johannesburg.
It's a U.S. exit, again, with the stroke of a pen.
The next item here is the withdrawal from the Paris Climate Treaty.
Just hours after being sworn into office Monday, President Trump had initiated Washington's withdrawal from the WHO and Paris Climate Deal. It may be some time before the broader impact of those moves will be clear, but Corbis van Staden, a China-Africa expert with the South African Institute of International Affairs, says one unintended consequence could be a shift in the global balance of power in these international institutions.
The U.S. withdrawal from the World Health Organization, from the Paris Accord, weakens the voice that the U.S. had in those organizations. The net effect of many of these orders is to just further make China more central in the relationship with many global South countries, particularly also in Africa.
While China may be the world's largest greenhouse gas emitter, it's also the biggest manufacturer of green technology products globally, notes Christian Gerald Niemer from the think tank called China Global South Project.
When the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Accord, China can rightfully put it forward its narrative of being the green technology champion.
During a news conference on Tuesday, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Guo Zhaokun voiced concern about Trump's decision on the Paris Climate Agreement.
Climate change is a common challenge facing mankind. No country can stay out of it. No country can be immune to it. Chinese determination and actions to actively respond to climate change will be consistent.
This is what Jean Kaseya, African CDC Director General, told Newsroom Africa on Tuesday when asked about the potential impact of Trump pulling out of the WHO.
My interest is the health of African people, and the U.S. is the main partner that we have in Africa. And the U.S. is providing a large spectrum of services to African people. I think it's time for us to understand the decision that is made and to see how we can overcome this challenge for African people.
At the same time, Kaseya says he sees opportunities with the new administration to create, as he puts it, a win-win for us all. Nima of the China Global South Project said the U.S. withdrawal from the World Health Organization, which will take a year, could help position China as a leader in global health.
When it comes to health cooperation, we can also see how much China is expanding its own influence in Africa with different medical cooperation it has with different countries.
China has a long record of building hospitals in Africa and sending medical aid ships and doctors to the continent. But Washington's withdrawal could see even more demand for funding and support from Beijing. Trump has accused the WHO of mishandling the COVID-19 pandemic. He also said he resents the fact that the U.S., the WHO's largest contributor, gives much more money to the organization than China contributes.
Pretty sad, though. Think of it. China pays $39 million and we pay $500 million. And China's a bigger country.
In further remarks on Tuesday, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said China would continue to support the WHO in fulfilling its responsibilities, deepen international public health cooperation, and strengthen global health governance. Bob Wekesa, director at the African Center for the Study of the United States at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, said ultimately Trump's orders meant Africa would have to turn elsewhere for help.
African countries will now eventually have to figure out how to raise their own internal resources. for matters to do with their health, and if not, kind of rely on Europeans and the Chinese and Indians.
Last month, the U.S. announced more than $1 billion in humanitarian assistance to African countries. But Wakesa said, with the U.S. pulling out of the WHO, relying less on the U.S. is a lesson that African countries already learned during Trump's first term in office. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A new graduate-level school is set to open its doors in Africa in September. It's called the African School of Governance. Applications will be accepted from February 1st through April 30th of this year. Professor Kingsley Mongalu, a former deputy governor of the Central Bank of Nigeria, is the president of the African School of Governance, which will be based in Kigali, Rwanda. He tells me that it will train leaders who have a world view of what Africa's place should be in the world and who believe that African problems should be solved by Africans. He also says the school hopes to address the continent's challenges through ethical leadership development.
Well, the idea behind the African School of Governance is that Africa needs to have a pipeline of training of the leaders that will have the mindset, the knowledge, and the skills to meet the challenges and opportunities that the continent faces in the 21st century. It's a recognition that there's a huge leadership and governance deficit in the continent. And so the ASG is a very practical and concrete and visionary approach to addressing this problem.
So if there's a deficit of leaders, what would you say would be the difference between current leaders and what the African School of Governance hope to put out?
Well, the difference is going to be mainly in the area of mindsets. We are going to train leaders with a worldview of what Africa's place should be in the world and how, you know, African countries should organize their internal spaces. And they will have a recognition or they will have a desire to assert an African narrative. And we will teach in African-specific context. So the leaders we will produce, hopefully, will not be those that constantly seek external validation. They will be leaders who are confident that they are Africans and that African problems should be solved by Africans.
Who is going to be funding this school?
Well, the African School of Governance, as I mentioned, has received initial funding support from the MasterCard Foundation. That's the foundation of MasterCard Corporation. They have been a foundational partner in establishing the university. As we go along, of course, there will be other funders who will come forward to support the university. So we're going to be diversifying the funding base.
When do you hope to start classes?
We hope to start classes in September 2025. There are a number of different kinds of programs that the ASG will be offering. The Master of Public Administration program, the MPA, which is the flagship, will start in September. We will also have the Executive Education program, which is short courses of 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That should be starting in May or June this year of 2025. So the application portal will open February 1 and run through April 30. Those who are interested to apply on our website, www.asg.ac.
What is the tuition and how does this compare to a regular four-year university in Africa?
Well, first of all, the African School of Governance is not a four-year university. It's a graduate-level institution that will offer only master's degrees. So comparing it with a four-year university is not appropriate. You can compare it with other world-class graduate schools around the world. We will be announcing the fees as from February on our website. But it's not going to be very high, but it's not going to be free.
Professor Kingsley Mogalu is the president of the newly established African School of Governance. He was speaking with us from Kigali, Rwanda. Former Liberian warlord turned senator Prince Y. Johnson was celebrated at his funeral as a hero. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
Senator Prince Johnson was buried last Saturday, January 18, in his home region of Nima County, following a week-long state and traditional funeral. President Joseph Boakye eulogized him as a man who contributed to national reconciliation and supported the resolution to establish the War Crimes Court.
In his later years, Senator Johnson worked diligently to promote healing in our nation. He often described himself as a man of peace. One of his significant contributions to the nation before his passing was his public support for the establishment of War Crimes Court.
Vice President Jeremiah Kuhn, who also hails from Johnson's Nima County, described the late senator as the liberator of the region's people.
He was never guilty. And because he was never guilty, he signed a war crime court because he wanted to go to court and tell the people of this country that he defended this county and his people. And so he was never guilty. But you left your children here. And that's what we'll say for you, because you can't speak now. You are not guilty. You are never guilty. There is no court in this country or internationally that found you guilty. That's why we celebrate you as our hero.
Thomas Yaya Nimle is an ex-warlord and current senator of Grangide County. He blamed the Boakye government for betraying the late senator after an agreement to protect Johnson from the War Crimes Court for his role in the Long Civil War.
He went to rescue and did more than what he did for Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and Weah. He produced a vice president and produced a president simultaneously. And he was promised time. But when the time came, the time that was promising was never given. Senator Johnson was troubled. Senator Johnson was troubled. He called me 10 o'clock in the night. He said, I'm troubled. I was promised time and was not given time. And now we're talking about World Crown Court.
Also speaking at the funeral, Josephine Kuhlman, the resident representative of the president of the Economic Community of West Africa States, ECOWAS, recognized the late senator's contribution to education.
We remember him today for his conviction in education, which bears testament by the establishment of a university in Nimba. He held a firm conviction in the education of the youth as the key to unlocking Liberia's vast potential. This will continue to contribute meaningfully to accelerating ECOWAS's agenda for the youth as crucial to regional development, integration, peace and security.
Why some from the late Senator Johnson's home region of Nima County hail him as a hero for protecting them during the Liberian Civil War, others say his death comes without accountability for his role in the Civil War and for families of victims who accuse him of war crimes. For Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
More than 95% of the 66,000 cervical cancer cases occurring globally each year are caused by the human papilloma virus, or the HPV. According to the World Health Organization, every 2 minutes, a woman dies from this preventable disease globally. And as countries mark Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, the agency estimates that 90% of these deaths occur in low- and middle-income countries. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Cervical cancer is one of the most common cancers and leading cause of cancer-related deaths among women globally. Data from the World Health Organization indicates that 19 of the 20 most affected countries with cervical cancer are in Africa. In sub-Saharan Africa, cervical cancer remains the leading cause of cancer deaths among women. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus said most of these deaths and cases occur in countries that lack access to screening, treatment, and vaccine to the human population. papillomavirus.
This month, many countries around the world are raising awareness about cervical cancer. Cervical cancer is the fourth most common cancer in women globally, with an estimated 660,000 cases and 350,000 deaths each year. And yet, cervical cancer is one of the few cancers that can be prevented and cured if detected early.
Statistics from the HPV Information Center indicate that cervical cancer is the second most frequent form of cancer among women between the ages of 15 to 44 in Kenya. Kenya's Ministry of Health says creating awareness about screening and HPV vaccine intake will save thousands of women from this preventable disease. Mary Mudhoni is the Kenya's Public Health Principal Secretary. She said prioritizing the HPV vaccine is part of the efforts to fight the disease during January's Cervical Cancer Awareness Month.
Cervical cancer is the leading cause of cancer mortality in Kenya, with 5,845 new cases and 3,591 deaths annually. And to address this, the Ministry of Health has trained over 12,500 health workers in cervical cancer screening and treatment of the precancerous lesions.
The World Health Organization says if left untreated, persistent HPV infections cause 95% of cervical cancers. Tedros said preventing cervical cancer is an important part of the WHO's work to protect and provide for maternal health.
On the 17th of November 2020, WHO launched a global initiative on cervical cancer elimination. Since then, dozens of countries have introduced vaccines to prevent the disease, and many are also rolling out next-generation diagnostics. Eliminating cervical cancer is within reach if we can give all girls and women access to vaccines, tests, and treatments.
Global data released on July 15th last year indicates that the recommended one-dose HPV vaccine among girls aged 9 to 14 years increased from 20% in 2022 to 27% in 2023. Those figures mean that at least 6 million additional girls were reached with HPV treatment. As for the WHO's goals, each country should meet the target established to reduce cervical cancer by 2030 and to eliminate it by the end of the century. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ujiombo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Authorities in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo say M23 rebels have seized the town of Minova, a key supply route for the provincial capital Goma. The capture sparked a mass exodus of people in the face of a new offensive by the rebel group, which has captured several strategic towns in the region in recent weeks. The rebels took the key mining town of Masisi in North Kivu province earlier this month, another important route into Goma, the capital of South Kivu. Chad's Constitutional Council on Tuesday confirmed the MPS party of military ruler President Mahamat Idriss Deby Itno as the winner of the December general elections. They were boycotted by opposition parties, citing a final vote tally. The French news agency reports the council president, Jean-Bernard Padere, found Deby's party had won a solid majority in the first legislative elections held in the country since 2011, taking 124 seats out of 180. More than one-third of lawmakers, 64 in total, are women, Padere said, as he hailed clear progress towards parity of men and women in parliament. Deby and his government presented the elections as the final stage in the transition to democracy. This after he seized power in 2021 following the death of his father, who had ruled the Sahel country for three decades. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Partey in Washington saying, have a lovely day.